Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art is presenting the first major traveling exhibition devoted to indigenous female artists and artisans. Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, features traditional artwork and ethnographic pieces alongside a range of contemporary work, from painting, sculpture, and photography to pottery, basketry, beadwork, textiles, and more. Organized into three core themes, power, legacy, and relationships, the exhibit features traditional artworks alongside contemporary pieces, often using the same types of material and thematic elements. Philbrook's curator of Native American art, Christina Burke, was part of the advisory team of artists and curators that helped guide the creating curators and convened a group of Oklahoma artists to advise her on additional pieces for the Tulsa showing. She's my guest today. In addition, the museum is also showcasing the museum's collection of arguably the most recognizable female Indian artist, Maria Martinez. A display of her black-on-black pottery is also on display at the museum. Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, is on display through January 3rd at the museum. It's currently open to members. It opens to the public next Wednesday. Christina Burke, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hearts of Our People is really, it's hard to believe that it is the first major traveling exhibition of female indigenous artists. And it also comes with a realization that most of what we call, quote, artworks or ethnographic objects made by indigenous people in museums were created by women. I think we spend a lot of time thinking about the culture that created it, but not necessarily about the people within the culture who did create it.
Yes, and you know, when we think about Native American art, often what comes to mind is pottery, basketry, weaving, clothing, textiles, quill work, beadwork, and historically all of those art forms were the domain of indigenous women in their communities. But they don't often get credit for those creations, and way too often we don't know the names of these individual artists in order to recognize them as artists. So this show does a great service towards that end.
Hearts of Our People was in development for 5 years prior to the exhibit opening at the Minneapolis Institute of Art. That seems like a little longer than usual, although some exhibits do take longer than others. But it also had a lot of collaboration between the curators and, in this case, an advisory board of Native artists and Native curators. Why all this collaboration for this particular exhibit?
Well, when the co-curators, Jill Albrecht-Yo from the Minneapolis Institute of Art, and Terry Greaves, a Kiowa Nation member and artist, independent curator, first started talking about this project back in 2014, they quickly realized that the subject and the project was way too large for them to tackle on their own. So they convened this 21-woman advisory board in Minneapolis in November of 2015 to ensure that multiple voices and perspectives were heard and that there was community involvement. So as Terry Greaves has said many times, she is a member of the Kiowa Nation, so she really doesn't have the authority or knowledge to speak for Native artists from other communities, from Muscogee Creek, from Lakota. And so we, on the advisory board and the co-curators, Jill and Terry, really wanted to get as many voices as possible from women who were makers themselves, who were culture bearers, who were authorities in their own communities, as well as the curatorial and sort of academic perspectives on indigenous art.
While that helped put together the entire exhibit, once it came to Tulsa, and that was a deliberate move by the creators of the exhibition. They definitely wanted to have it within the sovereign territory of an Indian tribe, in this case, here in Oklahoma. You convene your own advisory board for the addition of some objects for the Tulsa showing.
That's right. Well, with large traveling exhibitions like this that may be on the road for a year or more, sometimes lenders, whether they're private collectors or institutions, museums, historical societies, may not want their objects on the road for a year or more because of thinking about conservation concerns for the objects themselves. So early on, we knew that there were certain pieces that would be on exhibit in Minneapolis and at the Frist Museum in Nashville, Tennessee, but would not travel to Washington, D.C., to the Renwick Gallery, or to Philbrook. And the co-curators, Jill and Terry, very generously said, you know, the show coming to Oklahoma, to Indian Territory, the home of 39 indigenous nations, more than any other state in the country. It was an opportunity for Philbrook to add more objects from Oklahoma Native communities to our presentation here within the boundaries of Muscogee Creek Nation. But because this exhibition has been a community collaboration from the very beginning, I knew that I couldn't be the non-Native curator of Native American art to work alone in isolation to choose these Oklahoma objects. So I asked a number of Oklahoma Native women to come together to form an Oklahoma advisory board to review, you know, lists from our database. We spent about almost an entire day looking at about 200 objects from Philbrook's collection and chose several of them to be part of this presentation here.
Now, what are some of the objects you added here for the Tulsa showing that people will be able to see? And I know one is very prominent right as you first walk into the galleries, and it was an important statement that the curator said they wanted to make about this exhibit.
So one of the pieces that the Oklahoma Board felt very strongly should be not only a part of this show, but as you mentioned, prominent in the introduction, is a painting by Valjean Hessing called Choctaw Removal, which of course represents the forced removal of Native tribes from their traditional homelands back east to Indian Territory, to Oklahoma. And because that is an important and, if painful, but important part of Oklahoma history, to have Hearts of Our People on exhibit here, we can't erase or overlook or sidestep those kinds of stories, particularly here. And these are parts of history that are not just about the past, but continue to have to resonate and have implications in the 21st century.
Well, they have implications because of some of the themes of the show, which deal with power, would deal with the legacy. That goes right to the fact that the reason there are 39 tribes in Oklahoma is not because there were 39 tribes on this land, you know, traditionally. They were removed to this particular land.
Absolutely. Many of them were forcibly removed by the government at various times and for various reasons to this place that, from a government perspective back in the day, no one else wanted to live. But then with the discovery of oil underneath the land here, things changed. And we see parallel stories in other parts of the country, for instance, with the discovery of gold in California and even in the Northern Plains in western South Dakota in the Black Hills.
Right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the exhibit Hearts of Our People. And what you notice when you walk through the exhibit is each room, if I can call it room, you know, each space of the exhibit, is a mixture of what I would call traditional arts along with contemporary arts. And what's really interesting, I think, about a lot of the juxtapositions is that you can see the relationship between the contemporary artist and some of the traditional art making within that particular space.
Well, that's great to hear you say that. That means the exhibition is a success on that aspect alone. Yes, so from the beginning, the co-curators and advisory board thought it was important to organize this exhibition thematically. Rather than have a chronological presentation, a timeline of the oldest object to the newest object, or take an anthropological approach and have a big map with culture areas and talk about regions, these themes were developed with the advisory board to organize the show so that we can have historical objects and contemporary works in dialogue, just as you described. So the three themes are legacy, relationships, and power. And within those, there are sort of sub-themes. So, for instance, legacy, thinking about artistic legacy that's passed down within generations, and the incredible Beaded Outfit by the Growing Thunder family, which was a collaboration among three generations of a family. And relationships, thinking about relationships among human beings, but also the connections between humans and what we think of as the natural world and the spirit world.
Now, that beadwork dress is amazing. And what it's really interesting about it, it is contemporarily done, but it's using the traditional techniques. And then you'll see traditional techniques used in another utterly contemporary way, because later in the exhibition, you'll see a pair of high fashion shoes, again, using the traditional beadworks, but done in a completely different way.
Yes, and the shoes you're referring to, I believe, are the a work called Adaptation 2 by Jamie Okuma, and it's a pair of beaded Christian Louboutin shoes that have both actually beadwork and quill work, and thinking about these materials and techniques that Native women have been working in for generations. But beadwork in particular, I think, is an important material and technique to talk about because in and of itself, it is a cross-cultural artistic form. So those glass beads were acquired in trade from non-Native people. They were mass-produced in Europe in places like Czechoslovakia and Italy and traded to Native people, the artists of whom immediately started using them to embellish clothing, moccasins, all kinds of objects. So those glass beads represent international trade and cross-cultural communication going back generations.
My guest today is Christina Burke. She is the curator of Native American art and one of the curators for Hearts of Our People. She served on the National Advisory Board and is presenting curator for the exhibit being presented by Philbrook Museum of Art. Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, is on display through January 3rd at Philbrook. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, there's some really amazing contemporary artworks. One that catches your eye right when you walk in is Cara Romero's Ka, which personifies the spirit clay lady, in which this very contemporary portrait in which the woman is sort of has this clay on the outside of her body, and she's capturing this moment at just a fraction of a second. It's a resting image.
It is, and it's a very large format photograph, so it is very dynamic, and capturing that fraction of a second of Ka sort of throwing her head and hair back in the air, that moment of creation. So for Pueblo people of the Southwest, Ka is a creative being, clay woman, earth mother, and thinking about the importance of clay for Pueblo people as a material with which they have always built their homes, adobe bricks to build homes to protect families, but also as a means of creating art and having that artistic expression, whether it's creating utilitarian vessels for use within the community or works of art, sculptures, installations for sale to collectors and curators to earn money to feed your family.
Right. And there are examples of both types there in that same area. One from around 1900, a more functional object, and then another piece created as an art object.
Absolutely. And I think one of the important lessons also is that even the historical objects and that we may categorize as functional or utilitarian were still made with tribal aesthetics and these artistic traditions in mind.
Right. Even if, you know, we buy functional objects today for their beauty. Why wouldn't it be the same?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, another couple of pieces that are really amazing is Christy Belcour, The Wisdom of the Universe, which is a painting that represents plants and animals under threat or that are endangered in her native area, which is Canada. But what's really amazing about this very large-scale painting is it represents beadwork, but done with paint.
Yes, it is a large-scale painting. And when you see it online or, you know, published in a book, a thumbnail, it's deceptive in that it does look like beadwork. I think that's part of its appeal. It's bright, vibrant, thinking about glass beads, again, that have been used for generations by indigenous artists, very curvilinear, organic, all of these interconnected networks of plants, animals, insects, birds. The piece itself is a very large-scale painting. I think it's 4.5 by 8 feet, something like that. It has its own wall in the exhibition.
Yeah.
But again, bright, vibrant colors, but all of the species represented on it with these tiny dots of paint. In homage to beadwork. All of those species are either extinct or endangered in Canada. And she's really speaking about how all of these networks of what we call the natural world, we are a part of, and our behavior affects them, and what happens to them impacts us as human beings as well.
That theme comes up a couple of times within the show. There's another piece by Jolene Rickard called The Sky is Darkening, which is an homage to passenger pigeons. The whole title of the piece is How the Sky Was Dark with Passenger Pigeons. And it's a mixed media piece that uses beadwork in a very untraditional way, these sort of 3D doves against a backdrop of, I guess I'd call them pigeon portraits, or almost they're almost like these photos of seeing, you know, racks of animals that have been slaughtered and, you know, sort of put up on a wall. It sort of reminded me of that. It's a very powerful piece, environmental piece.
It is, and it's another example of collaboration. So Jolene Rickard is an artist, a scholar on faculty at Cornell University. She works in photography and other media, and so the photographs of those specimens of passenger pigeons are her creation. And then she worked with women in her community, the Tuscarora community near Niagara Falls, New York, who are known for what's called raised beadwork, a specific kind of beadwork from their community, traditional to their community, to create these beaded bird figures. In the late 19th, early 20th century, those kinds of beaded figures of birds and other animals were made for the tourist trade, so made for sale outside of the Tuscarora community, and particularly with this raised beadwork. And so she's talking again about this connection between the human and the natural world, the implications for both, but also this cross-cultural exchange between native and non-native communities.
Now, one of the things that the exhibit features is it features a wide range of artwork. I mean, paintings, sculpture, textiles, tapestries, sculpture, ceramics, just about every type of art making there is represented in this show. One that really caught my eye was this collaboration between Dorothy Grant and Robert Davidson called the Hummingbird Copper Dress. It's a beautiful, beautiful textile, very contemporary textile. Again, at first glance, you might say, what does this have to do with this show? But then as you examine it closer, you see, oh, these are iconography of Native America.
Yes, and so that particular piece, Dorothy Grant and Robert Davidson are from the Northwest Coast, and so the bold graphic lines you see on that outfit are the kinds of presentation that you'd also see carved into totem poles and masks from that area, from Alaska, British Columbia. And Robert Davidson is a master carver and printmaker, and Dorothy Grant has been working in textiles and fashion for decades. So it was a collaborative piece that I hope in some ways is sort of recognizable in terms of that graphic element. And thinking about the hummingbird, and, you know, you might think, well, this little tiny bird, you know, what sort of relationship do we have to tiny creatures like that? But they really are remarkable in and of themselves, and, of course, are an integral part of our environmental network and this sort of, this relationship among all species.
And there are a number of Oklahoma artists, some that Philbrook has put in the show, but there were others that traveled in the show. I'm thinking of Kay Walking Stick, her diptych. There's one of her diptychs, again, that feature this, what was her earlier very completely abstract work, and then her more landscape work that she's done in more recent years, and how she's melded the two of them together. And then the late Shan Goshorn. I'm glad to see there's one of her beautiful, beautiful basketry works of these elder trees that have this such beauty to them. It's hard to believe it's made out of a basket. It's a basket because they're just such a beautiful image.
Yes, and really it's a set of seven baskets that are shown together. And Shan, who we lost way too early, was an amazing artist who worked in various media, including photography, as well as painting, basketry, etc. And so this piece, I think, really highlights the later part of her career in which she's incorporated various media in her work to create this series of baskets. The photographs were taken of these very old, tall trees, but the perspective is from the ground. So looking up at these towering beings, if you will. And I was actually giving a tour yesterday afternoon, and one of the things that struck me in the moment was the title of the piece, Elder Trees, thinking about this relationship among human beings and what we think of as the natural world, and that Shan very purposely referred to them as elders. And what that means in many Native communities are not just older members of the community, but wisdom keepers. people who have acquired knowledge and wisdom over the decades who have a responsibility then to share that knowledge with younger generations. But it's also the younger generation's responsibility to listen to their elders. And I think Shan has left us with some important lessons with that work, but also the many pieces of work, I know a lot of which will be on exhibit at the Gilcrease show that's coming up here soon.
Yes. My guest today is Christina Burke, a curator of Native American art at Philbrook Museum. Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, is on display through January 3rd. It's the first major traveling exhibition of female indigenous artists, as far as anyone can remember. And it is really a remarkable show. And we're running out of time because I want to talk about some of the other things going on at Philbrook in conjunction with the show. But I just want to say that there's some really arresting pieces in the show. Things like Rebecca Belmore's Fringe. It's a beautiful, it's a transparency, actually. And it features what you would consider is a traditional European art history pose, a woman nude on her back with the back towards the viewer. But in this case, the woman is scarred by from shoulder to waist with, I guess it's a fringe being hanging down from this scar. And it's just a very powerful emotional image.
It is, and that is the artist herself, and that scar, that cut across her back was created with makeup. But from that scar, it looks like rivulets of blood coming out of that wound, but they're actually strings of red beads. And the piece is talking about the violence done to indigenous women over the centuries, women as individuals, but also as a category. Of Native people, and that is still being done today. There is an epidemic of missing and murdered indigenous women, much higher percentages than other ethnic groups in both Canada and the U.S., and too often these crimes against indigenous women go uninvestigated and unprosecuted.
Well, I want to talk about the ancillary Philbrook exhibition, which is going on concurrently, featuring your incredible collection of Maria Martinez pottery. Tell us a little bit about Maria Martinez, because if you've ever seen her pottery, it is just so lustrous. It's that traditional black San Ildefonso Pueblo pottery, but in the show you show some of her other work as well.
Yes, so Maria Martinez was from San Ildefonso Pueblo in northern New Mexico, and she and family members, her husband Julian, and children and grandchildren, worked in this traditional Pueblo pottery form. But in the early 20th century, she and her husband Julian rediscovered how to make this black-on-black pottery that historically had been made by Pueblo ancestors, but the knowledge of which had been lost for millennia, actually. Mm-hmm. But Marie and Julian rediscovered how to create the surface in which there's a contrast between shiny black surface and a matte finished, which is overpaint of slip, so a watery form of clay that's painted over the surface that has been polished and shiny. And it became incredibly popular. And in fact, Maria and Julian demonstrated how to make these kinds of objects around the country at world's fairs, mm-hmm. for instance, in St. Louis, Chicago, San Diego. And so millions of people saw their work, and it became so popular that everybody wanted a Maria pot. And so she's credited as the first Pueblo woman to sign her pottery. Previous to that, pots might be attributed to a particular community or Pueblo, but not to an individual artist. And so Maria's career as being recognized as an individual and as a master artist, not just in her community or in her region, but nationally and internationally, she holds such an important position in terms of crediting indigenous women for their creativity.
Yeah, really the first woman to really stand out as an individual woman artist. And in the show, you feature a lot of examples of her work, but also these wonderful photos of Laura Gilpin of documenting Maria Martinez in her life and in her work.
We're incredibly lucky to have a rich collection of Pueblo pottery in general, and works by Maria and her family, actually four generations of her family, in addition to these really beautiful black and white photographs of Maria and her family by Laura Gilpin, so another woman artist, not native, but Laura Gilpin and Maria Martinez were actually friends over a 30-year period or so. So they really knew each other quite well, and Gilpin documented the process of Maria making and decorating and polishing and selling pots. So we decided this was a perfect opportunity to highlight the strength of Philbrook's collection in that area while we had Hearts of Our People on exhibit as well.
Now, very quickly, there's another aspect of the show that is out in the gardens.
And speaking of Maria Martinez, so one of the iconic objects of this show is a piece called Maria in honor of Maria Martinez. It's a 1985 Chevy El Camino that has been completely rebuilt and customized by artist Rose B. Simpson from Santa Clara Pueblo in New Mexico. So it is a car that Rose rebuilt the engine, the transmission, and then custom painted the outside black on black in honor of Maria Martinez, who was such a force in the native art world.
Now, aren't there some visual elements out in the gardens, some literary elements having to do with the show?
There are. So from the beginning, the co-curators and advisory board wanted to, as you have mentioned, include diverse arts from pottery to photography to video to installation to cars and poetry and the literary arts. So there are 8 poems and literary texts that we've installed in the garden to create a poetry walk from the installation of the car in our garden back towards Crow Creek. And I also want to mention a couple other aspects of the installation in the garden. One is a grass maze that we've commissioned from local artist Addie Roanhorse. And the other is that we have partnered with the Intertribal Agricultural Council and Pawnee Nation Seed Preservation Project and planted some heirloom seeds in our Victory Garden. So the harvest of those heirloom seeds will be donated, as always, to the Food Bank of Eastern Oklahoma. So we've got plenty of artworks by indigenous women throughout the villa, our special exhibition gallery, and even in the gardens.
All right. Well, Christina, thank you very much for your time today. Hearts of Our People on display right now for members, but it opens to the public this coming Wednesday and will be on display through January 3rd. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Christina Burke is the curator of Native American art at Philbrook Museum of Art, which is presenting the traveling exhibition Hearts of Our People, Native Women Artists, on display through January 3rd at the museum. Currently, the exhibit is open to members. It opens to the public next Wednesday. And, of course, to attend Philbrook during the pandemic, you need to have advance tickets. For information, visit philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.